Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody! Recruiting Animal here. Got a really interesting letter this week. As usual, it's just like all the others, but it's more philosophical. And here's what it says. Want to share it with you. Dear Recruiting Animal, I listened to your show last week, and my first reaction was that I got the wrong podcast. I said to myself, this can't be a show about business. But when I finally realized I was in the right place, I began to feel sorry for America, because it's always the nuts who fill up the airwaves, isn't it? Where, I asked myself, are the decent people? Why don't they have shows about recruiting that aren't such nonsense? Of course, I knew the answer. They're too busy working. That's why show business is so anti-business, because it's full of slackers like you who don't want to work and make fun of those who do to hide their own failures. So I predict great success for you, Recruiting Animal. After all, the field is clear because better men than you have no interest in the game. In case you didn't hear that, better men than you have no interest in the game. End of letter. Tell me that isn't terrific. And here's my answer to this guy. Kiss my ATS! If you don't like the show, don't listen! Go start your own. I'm sure it'll be boring as hell, and you know it's true! Issue number two. I saw that Big Bill Vick from Dallas, Texas, hit an article online the other day called Top 7 Things to Say to a Friend, to a friend who lost his job. So I made my own list. It's called Top 5 Things to Say to a Friend Who Lost His Job. I'm not as smart as Bill. I can't think of 7. So here's mine. Number one thing to say to a friend who lost his job. I hate to say it, but who's going to hire you at your age? Number two, well, you're never going to make that kind of money again, that's for sure. Number three, listen, I got the name of a recruiter, but, you know, you got a lot of strikes against you, so don't get your hopes up. He might not even return your calls. Number four, gee, I always thought you were more successful than me. I guess I was wrong, eh? And number five thing to say to a friend who lost his job, you know that $100 you owe me? You think I could have it now? I mean, you might not be able to pay me in the future, and why should I suffer because you can't hold a job? Well, we got a great show today, even if you didn't like that. We got a great show. The guest is career expert Susan Strayer, and she's going to talk about personal branding. When I think of branding, I always see a picture of a cow getting burnt by a hot iron, and that hurts. So let's see if personal branding is any different. In case you forgot, I'm the Recruiting Animal, and this is the Recruiting Animal Show! Oh, everybody's on. Susan Strayer, are you there?
I am.
Oh, thank God. You know, people have been standing me up. And I had to take some Alka-Seltzer before the show today. I don't know what that means, but I hope it doesn't affect the show. So thanks for coming.
Absolutely.
Absolutely what? Okay, forget that. We don't know who you are. In fact, somebody called me just before the show, no offense, and said, who is she? Do we know her? I said, I know her, but not everybody does. So give us your elevator speech, okay?
Absolutely.
I am absolutely on this show, okay? I don't like that phrase. Go ahead.
Hey, if you're going to have me as your guest, I'm going to say what I want.
We'll see about that. Go ahead. Elevator speech.
I'm an HR recruiting and performance strategy professional, and the way that I'm different is that I've worked on both sides of the house. I've been a career coach, so I can talk your psychological talk, but I've worked in the corporate recruiting and HR consulting world for over 10 years. So I can see what job seekers have to say and what they think, and I can tell you what it's like from the desk of a senior vice president of human resources in the company that you want to work in.
You were a senior vice president, or you can see through the eyes of a senior vice president?
I wasn't an SVP. Got to be working in the corporate world for 20 to 30 years to get there in a Fortune 500 company.
Uh-huh.
But I have worked with and alongside plenty of them, and I can tell you exactly what they're going to say.
What are they going to say?
Well, they're going to tell you you've got 10 seconds, and don't tell me specifically what you have to offer. Tell me how you're different. That's the first thing I want to hear.
Okay, hold on. Before we get into that, you gave yourself two titles right at the beginning. Something was with performance. Tell me that again.
I call myself an HR recruiting and performance strategy professional.
What does that mean?
It means, A, I know the ins and outs of HR. B,
yeah.
I know the ins and outs of recruiting. And C, I know the ins and outs of strategies that companies take to perform effectively. So that includes performance development. So for those of you that don't know what that means, that's your performance review. That's, are you an A, B, C, or D player? And how are your people performing on the job, and how do you develop them?
Okay, do you know what recruiters are called in France?
I don't.
Recruitons. Okay. Anybody want to talk to Susan before I really dig in? No, there's a lot of people here. We'll introduce them later. Definition of a personal brand. Let's start there. Talk a little slower. I'm having trouble following you. Is that okay?
Absolutely.
Nice. Okay.
Anyway.
Here's how I'm gonna answer the question myself then.
Please.
Here's how I define a personal brand. It's the ideas that come to mind automatically when you think about somebody. Is that correct?
It is, to a point. It's not just the ideas. It's your first reaction. An idea and reaction are two different things. So when you think about it, I always use the concept of product brands because people get that. So when you say MP3 player, people have ideas about what an MP3 player is. But when you say Apple or iPod, people have a reaction to what an iPod is. And those
are two
different
things. So it's an automatic emotional reaction primarily. Is that what you're saying?
Definitely.
Okay, you know, you've got a book. Why don't you advertise your book before we get going? Because we don't know how much people are going to listen to the show.
Sure. My book is The Right Job Right Now, The Complete Toolkit for Finding Your Perfect Career.
Okay.
And when I was a career coach, there were too many books on the market, and everything was focused on psychology. What's your career flower? What do you feel? What do you emote? How do you want your passions to be played? And in reality, all of that is important about you, but my book focuses on how do you make yourself marketable and what is your brand? How do you make yourself valuable to the people that want you? So it has a model that helps you very easily walk through what you have to offer and what you want in return. And it's the intersection of those two things that create your brand.
Okay, and if they want to take a look at your book, it's susanstrayer.com, right?
Absolutely.
Strayer is Strayer.
And it's on Amazon, Borders, Barnes & Noble. You can find it in all of those places as well.
Okay. So, definition of a brand, it's an emotional reaction. Let's go. I told you I want to talk about some celebrity brands just so we'll understand it. We'll have some examples, okay?
Sure.
Do you have them or should I toss them out?
The couple of celebrity brands that I use, one is Oprah Winfrey. Everybody has an emotional reaction to Oprah. On the most part, those emotional reactions are good. Some people, though, can't stand Oprah.
Yeah.
And Oprah is... her brand is strong because she's okay with that. If she wanted everybody to like her, she wouldn't be as successful as she is. And that's rule number one in branding.
Give me that again then. What's the rule number one?
Rule number one is you can't expect or want everyone to like you.
Why not?
Well, then you end up diluting your brand. If Oprah tried to appeal, for example, to middle-aged men as much as she appeals to middle-aged women, think about the topics on her show. Instead of focusing, for example, on women's health, or her latest endeavors in terms of these online life skills webinars that she's doing that are very emotionally based, she would have to dilute those. She'd have to make them less emotional, less female-oriented. And she'd
lose
the audience.
So you got to cut the cheese somewhere. You can't be everything to all people if you're going to have a powerful brand, right?
Exactly, because then you dilute it. You won't get that emotional reaction.
Yeah, I'm happy you said exactly instead of absolutely. Thank you very much. I appreciate that. Okay. But one thing, you said branding, a response to a brand is an automatic emotional reaction. But can we translate that into words? What is Oprah's brand?
I don't know, because it's a different thing to everybody. It's a different thing to each person. If I tell you what I think Oprah's brand is, someone else will tell you something different. The key is for Oprah to see where all of those words overlap. So someone will say, here's what I think of Susan. Someone else will say something different. What I want to do is go out and do that research and figure out what people think about me, and then figure out, am I sending the right message? Do those words overlap? If you go to traditional marketing and you look at what a traditional definition of brand is, it's a product, service, or concept, or essentially collection of products or services that are publicly distinguishable. So I translate that to, for a person, you can't be publicly distinguishable when people are necessarily not seeing you in person or picking up your product, but they're reading about you. And so that's where the emotional piece comes in.
Okay, hold on a second. So you said something else then. Oprah, you said two interesting things for me. Oprah is not only, she has a powerful brand, but it's distinct. There's not a dozen Oprahs, right? She
exactly.
has to differentiate herself from other people, right?
Yes. And she does that by being related. In my, you know, for the brand perception I get, and I'd be interested to hear what other participants have to say today, but for me, you know, Oprah is admired. She's relatable. She's personable. She's human. She's interesting. And she's focused on things that matter to you.
Okay, so you did.
And she does that better than everybody else.
Okay, so she might do the same thing as other people, but she does it better. Is that
exactly.
a brand?
Exactly. And she started out, if you remember, I don't know how many of you remember, when Oprah was a reporter in Baltimore, one of the things that she did so well is she was very relatable and human. You look at some news reporters today, and they're very fake. Tons of makeup, perfect clothes, perfect jewelry. They speak in a monotone voice on the air. And when they try to joke with their fellow anchormen or women, it's very forced, and you're almost embarrassed for them. Oprah was really good at being human. And that's why they offered her that first talk show, because they thought she was so relatable. One of the things that they talked about was her crazy hair. At the time, she had very, very curly, very wild hair. And a lot of African-American women could relate to that.
Okay, so let's just come – I want to talk about hair, but later on. One more thing in this section.
You said
if you do the research on your brand, like you ask, let's say, six friends what they think about you, not like they're going to tell you the truth, but theoretically, you're looking for the common denominator, and then you want to hammer that one home. Is that what you're saying?
It is, with one exception, and that is you don't just want to ask your friends. You want to ask different audiences. So if you think about, for example, I'll go back to my iPod example. When Apple's doing their market research, or when they were at the beginning, to determine the brand they wanted to create for this new MP3 player they were creating, they focused specifically on who do we want to sell to first. Then let's find out what our perception is. What, for example, job seekers or career professionals, the mistake they make is they don't figure out first, who is my brand audience? Who am I trying to sell to? And then you can figure out what's the best way or how can I relate my brand to those people. But if you just ask your friends, 9 times out of 10, your friends aren't going to give you a job. Your friends aren't the ones that are managing.
But how does a person research it? Where I'm not Apple, I'm not Heinz. How do I research, the market for my personal brand? And you're saying two things there as well. You're saying it, I think correctly, that the market to a large extent shapes your brand, right?
It does shape your brand, but you have control over that. So your market, unless you shape the brand first, the market's going to shape it for you. So, for example, if you work in any company in America, unless you start being vocal about what your brand is, your boss or people that work with you and for you are going to shape it for you. So you do want to take control of your brand. But
okay,
now
I meant something different. I meant that your market, if you're selling to plumbers, you figure out what plumbers want, and then you shape yourself to meet them. Presumably,
yeah.
You've gone into plumbing supplies because you've got some strengths in that area, whether they're talents or experience, so you got some raw material for your own brand, but the finished brand is sort of put into the mold to meet the needs of your audience. Is that what you're saying?
Yes. You look not just at what plumbers want, but you also look at how you can do it differently. So, again, just like iPod, Apple looked at the market and said, people want music in an electronic format, but how can we do it differently? And so they focused on design, which no other company did. They delivered that same product, but in a different way, and focused on the click wheel, focused on the cool colors. So you can do the same thing. You can look at, you know, plumbers. You can figure out what they want, and then you can look at what other people are offering, because, you know, there's a million people that have the same skill set, similar resume as you, maybe different kinds of companies, and then you can figure out, how do I do it differently?
Okay, and I want to talk about differentiation, but first I want to ask if anybody wants to say anything to you. Anybody in the peanut gallery or the couch want to say hello to Susan?
Hello.
Who are you?
I'm afraid to tell you. I think I've been branded.
Well, okay, you don't have to tell me. Do you want to say something to Susan? What's your area code? Just tell me that.
949.
Okay, you're the okay. Go ahead.
No, it's Rayanne.
Rayanne, okay.
949 is Newport Beach, so that brands
that's
you already.
Exactly right. Yeah, so you've branded me already, and I've been branded on the show, but that's okay.
No.
I have a
nobody
question.
Nobody remembers. Go ahead.
What do you have?
Well, thanks so much, Animal. My question is, once a brand has been established, is there a possibility or an opportunity to change that?
There definitely is. Again, it's looking at, do the market research. Who thinks of your brand, or what are they saying now? What have they said in the past? And make sure that you've got a realistic assessment. You
hold
know,
on a second.
A minute
I'm
ago,
Rayanne,
you...
Susan, I'm a yeah. Okay. That's a good question, Rayanne. Let's just leave that for a second. Let's talk about establishing a brand, and then if there's something different about changing your bad brand, like Brittany has to change hers, we'll come to that. Is that okay?
Sure.
Okay. Anybody else want to put out a question now? No? Okay. So let's go back to where we are about differentiation. I just want to – so we're all recruiters here. If you go to a party and someone asks you, what do you do, and you say, I'm a recruiter, you're no different from other people. What do you have to say to make yourself stand out?
Well, first, you want to be specific about what it is you do, rather than, which most people say, I'm a recruiter. Who do you recruit for? How long have you been recruiting? And where are you looking to go with your career? That's the normal direction that I take people when they're doing that elevator speech. Tell me who you are, what you bring to the table, and what you're looking for.
So is the elevator speech sort of the pivot point, the key tool for establishing a brand?
First, you've got to introduce yourself. The elevator speech introduces you.
Yeah.
Introducing yourself is different from your brand. Brand takes repetition. Brand takes those distinguishable concepts that are public. So just an introduction to someone, if you've never met them before, yes, it's their first impression of you, but it's going to take some repetition to create that brand.
Okay, so you set it up with your elevator speech, and the elevator speech, for anyone who doesn't know, is like the two-minute introductory speech when someone says, who are you, what do you do, right?
2 minutes is too long. It should be 30 seconds.
30 seconds?
2 minutes is a long time. You think about it in your radio show. Would you let anybody talk for 2 minutes straight?
No.
Probably not.
Just me.
Okay. But anyone in general, at a cocktail party, it's very rare unless someone's telling a long story, a joke, anything, that someone's going to talk for 2 straight minutes. Time yourself and see. 2 minutes is a long time. 30 seconds is a good parameter. I can tell you who I am, what I bring to the table, and what I'm looking for.
Okay, so what you told us, though, with recruiters, the last thing you said was where you want to go in your career. Give me an example. What might you say? You're like, if you're internal, you mean I want my goal, would you just say, hey, my goal is to be VP of recruiting and such a company? I mean, well, how does that come out in plain language?
It depends why you're having that conversation. If you are working on your career if you're working on your brand from a career standpoint, then yes, you're going to say, I'm looking to move from individual corporate recruiting to recruiting model or recruiting function management, or to grow within the HR function, for example. But let's say you're not focused on your career. Let's say you're happy, and maybe you've got your own recruiting business. Maybe you're saying, I'm looking to expand my client base from hospitality or from hospitals to a larger service-oriented base.
Okay. It sounds a bit fuzzy to me, because let's say you're a generalist recruiter. We had this conversation last week. They say, who do you focus on? I'm a generalist. So you've got nothing. It seems contrived a bit to come up with something differentiating. Am I right or wrong about that?
You are wrong, and here's why. If you're a generalist, you're always...
You told me I'm wrong. Okay, go ahead.
You're always looking for something, right? Let's say I'm a generalist recruiter.
Yeah.
Maybe the latest thing I'm looking for is I'm looking for advice and guidance on how to better use social networking to strengthen the work that I do every day. I'm looking for advice and guidance on how to find a particular candidate in the search that I'm working on. Whether you're having a conversation about your career, everybody networks or has conversations because they have a need or they want something. So you can use that elevator speech or the profile speech, whatever you call it, to talk about what it is that you want. What is it that you're working on that someone can respond to? If I just say, oh, I'm a recruiter, I work for Microsoft, yeah, I've been working there 10 years. That doesn't give you anything to respond to.
I don't know. I don't know. You know what? I got some people here. They don't like you telling me that I'm wrong. Just so you know, I'm getting instant messages. I'm getting instant messages while they're going.
You're not always wrong, Adam.
I'm a generous recruiter. I just think it's easier to have funny hair or something like that, you know? Even if you're on the phone, I'm a generous recruiter and I have a funny haircut. When you see me, you're going to like it or you're going to laugh.
That is something that's distinguishable. But is that something that you want to be known for?
Well, you said it got Oprah a good job.
Well, it did because it made her more relatable. Is your funny hair going to help your brand in the work you do every day, Animal?
I don't know.
That's the question.
You know what? Let's go back to Rayanne. I'm running out of questions here. Let's go back to Rayanne's question. So you've got Rayanne's sort of implying there that you don't like the impression that that other people have of you, and you want to change it. So based on what you told me already, you have to do some pre-calculation about how you want to stand out. You have to, I assume, make it very simple so it's easy to work on, and then somehow hammer it home via repetition again and again and again in your working community or whatever group you're hanging around in. Is that a good outline?
It is a good outline. And by hammering it home, you've got to actually do the work. There's a personal branding or career branding guy by the name of David D'Alessandro, and he wrote a book called Brand Warfare and followed it up with a book called Career Warfare.
Mm-hmm.
And part of the book talks about personal branding, but the other part of the book talks about the work you do every day and how it creates your brand. So if you want to change your brand, it's not something that's going to happen overnight. It's an evolution. It's something that's going to take different work product. It's going to take a number of different interactions with some of those people that have a perception.
Okay. So, Rayanne, do you have a specific example you want to throw back at her?
Oh, well, I had read years ago, Seth Godin wrote that if you don't get the privilege of deciding what people will think. If they think it, then their truth is already established. So I think it's difficult to change that brand. However, your example of Oprah, she obviously changed her brand. She didn't keep that job because of the funny hairdo.
Mm-hmm.
She worked really hard and proved herself as somebody that was worthy of her success. So I don't know that you can change individuals' minds unless you come out with a big bang or try your hand in another cookie jar, if you will.
Okay, so Rayanne, here's what you're saying. If I'm right or wrong, tell me that once you make an impression on people, really hard to change it. If you want a new brand, you're better off establishing a new brand with people who don't know you yet. Is that what you're saying?
I think probably, yes.
I think
it's difficult to go.
Susan,
yeah.
Answer that question. Susan, answer the question.
Great question. I think that is only in extreme examples, right? I mean, look at someone like Paris Hilton, who started literally her career with a sex tape. She's changed her brand to be this teenage idol now and this social goddess over a course of several years with repetitive actions around associating herself with certain brands of clothes, with certain famous clubs, and with certain famous people. And that's how she started acting and singing, etc. So, yes, impressions are made, and you can't change them overnight. But you can do a series of things to change the minds of people. Now, once you walk away, once I get off this call, I can't necessarily control what everyone says. What I can do, though, is do the best I can to help shape the message. So I can get off this call and immediately go to my blog and blog about this dialogue. I can then reach out to others who may be on the call and ask them to blog. I could send a series of emails to everyone on the call. I could ask Animal if I could be on the call again to follow up with some of what we talked about. So it's that amount of control that you have over your brand, but you'll never have 100% control. That's why you want to shape it with as many different types of messages, just like corporate marketers do, with as many different types of messages.
Just so you know, nobody agrees with you about Paris Hilton. Her brand is very consistent. I'm getting a lot of feedback, and I agree with it. She hasn't changed. But hold on.
I would ask you, Animal, who's on this call today? What's our age demographic?
Right.
They're not Paris Hilton's audience. She's not reaching out to us. We're not buying music or watching her on
TV. Paris Hilton was famous long before her sex tape.
True,
and she was famous
for
socializing with famous people long before the sex tape.
But
in terms of demographics now,
that
she's popular in, that's what catapulted her to
that's
the
true.
Level of famous
apparently.
That she is now.
Apparently. Okay, let's not talk about Paris right now. I want to fixate on something you just said. You said you have to go at it from many, many angles. That contradicts what seems to be common sense to me. If you want to establish a brand, it has to be simple so people can understand it. So you can't maybe you have one simple brand, but you use a lot of channels. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, I probably didn't articulate myself correctly here. That's exactly it.
Okay,
so you've got
some
brand, but
examples.
Then you have to communicate and shape that brand.
So let's say you're working in an office. I don't know if that's a good example, but and everybody thinks you're a loser, right? And you want to become someone who gets promoted.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you start reshaping your brand? That might be a good example for Rayanne's question.
So first you have to find out why does everybody think you're a loser. Maybe it's because of your dress. Maybe because at the last office cocktail party you made a complete jerk of yourself. Maybe it's a series of the way you performed at certain meetings. So first you got to figure out why. Second, you have to figure out who thinks that you're a loser. Is it just a couple of people that are most popular in the office or the office grapevine? Or is it the people that you care about, your audience, VPs, senior VPs, you know, managers, anybody that can promote you to where you want to go?
Mm-hmm.
Once you figure out the who and the why, then you can start reshaping your brand. What are the couple of things that you want to get out there about yourself? And then use channels effectively to get them out there. So it may be specific projects you try to get yourself on. It might be a team you try to get yourself on. It might be working with a coach to help address some of the presentation or professionalism issues you might have.
Okay. There's two guys on there I know I can identify. I'll give them a chance. Workforce, you're there, right?
I am.
You do have a question or something for Susan?
You know, I tend to disagree with a lot of what she's saying, primarily because let's use an example of somebody in the recruiting industry, right? Let's use Joel Cheeseman as an example. People know Joel Cheeseman from Cheesehead, the blog. There are less people that know that Joel does search engine optimization. You know, that is his company, and his company was formed prior to him being a blogger. But people know him.
And your point?
My point is that people can have, like, Recruiting Animal is a brand, but you are, during the day, a recruiter. So what do you want to be known as? And I don't think that necessarily can be as easily reshaped as what we're talking about now.
Great point. So two things I'd mention. One is, how many brands do you have? Joel's got a different brand for who he works with on SEO than what he portrays on his blog. And what are your issues around both of those brands? I have a different brand in my day job than I do in my blog and with my book work and on this call right now. And so if you want to reshape your brand, you got to focus on which of the pieces are you working on and then look at the who and the why. I mean, you're right. It's not an easy process for sure, and it's going to take some time. If you look at the way brands change, look at just the way the brands you use every day change, whether it's an airline or whether it's a product you buy in the grocery store. It definitely takes time, but it can be done.
Okay. Workforce, you want to come back to her?
Nope, I'm good.
Okay, I got something before I forget. Rayanne is from California. Airhead, flaky, right? New York. Pushy, Seattle.
Well, last week you accused me of
That was your name.
I was going to show up without a tooth in my front. So.
Okay, we'll argue about that when you come on. Okay.
All right, sounds good.
I want to close your mic. Rayanne, like Okie, Oklahoma, Okies have an image. I don't know if they
there
have today.
Go.
In Canada. In Canada, Newfies have an image. Anthony J. Meany is a Newfie. And Torontonians have an image in Canada. I tend to think of us as bland, but, you know, people don't like us in the rest of Canada. So if you have a geographic brand, how do you shake that? What do you do with that? That's an issue, isn't it? And Dan Schwabel, he had a little series on stereotypes. So you come with brands that you don't choose. Am I right?
Definitely. You come with brands you don't choose, but I see those as things that can help or hurt your brand. So you create your brand, and then those are things that you don't have control over. I don't have control over the fact that I'm from Philadelphia, I talk fast, I have an accent, and I can be seen as that sort of pushiness. But what I can do is, in my day-to-day work, I can make promises about what my brand will deliver, and then I can deliver on those promises to formulate or to strengthen my brand. If you have an accent, you can try to tone down your accent, but sometimes you can't get rid of it completely. So you have to figure out how to make that less distinguishable and how to make the aspects of your brand that you want to promote. Maybe it's that you've got the best recruiting yield of anyone on your corporate recruiting team. Make that part of your promotion. Start talking about your numbers. Start offering to help others that have a lower yield than you do.
So people go through their, I don't know, I don't go through life thinking, how am I going to create my brand? Maybe I do, and I just don't realize it. Everybody's always worried about looking good, right? And that's really a brand-creating issue, right?
Looking good is definitely a brand-creating issue, and you draw the line based on your audience.
I'm not looking goofy. I mean,
right. You have to draw the line, though, based on your audience. I'll give you an example. I used to work at one of the biggest consulting firms, and we recruited someone that had dreadlocks. And because we had many government clients, and that's where he'd be working, we told him legally, if we could, that he had to get rid of his dreadlocks before we could hire him. And he made the decision not to take the job because he didn't want to have to change his brand or minimize parts of his brand that were so distinguishable that were important to him. There are parts of your brand, like your accent, that may be really important to you. I've lived in Tennessee. I had friends that love their southern accents, and they're not going to change them. And so they're not going to have an audience or work in places where they would have to change that brand. You'll never find them working in New York City for that reason.
Area code
512. Choices about that.
Area code 512 and 203 just joined. Do you want to ask Susan a question or say something? No?
Not for the moment. This is 512. Just dropped in the call a little late, so trying to catch up here.
You want to give us your name? Want to introduce yourself? You don't have to.
Yeah, Gene Brown. Gene Brown with Novotis.
Okay, Gene, hi.
Texas, hi.
Area code 203, do you want to say something to Susan, or are you just lurking? Lurking. Lurking? Okay, Dave Manister, do you have anything else to say? No? Okay, Susan, back.
No, sir, just listening.
Just listening. I was just giving you a chance. He's an important man, Susan. Okay, what about...
Thank you, Animal.
What about, like, you know, people, you know, so there's a lot of dumb people around, right? And what about if they brand you according to your astrology sign or something like that? You know, what do you do about that?
You control it. If someone brands you according to your astrology sign, then they're making an assumption. So that means there hasn't been enough repetition of interactions that you've had with them to change your mind about the brand. Everybody had an idea of what Kmart's brand was. Recently, they've started working on changing that repetition using different types of commercials, different types of interactions to change what their target audience thinks about them. So if they're not in your target audience, you don't care. You know, if my next-door neighbor thinks that because I'm a Leo, I'm loud and brash, that's fine, no problem. They're not my audience.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the key.
Right? Right?
That's why knowing your audience is so important.
Is he right about you? Okay. Okay, so astrology is a brand, though, right? If someone says you're a Taurus or a Scorpio or Capricorn, for some people that's a really strong brand, right?
For sure.
Okay. Okay. What about women and rough language? Carly Fiorina, she used to be the CEO of Hewlett-Packard. She got fired, right? She wrote a book about herself, and she told a story, and she said she had a confrontation when she was at AT&T with another manager. This is the quote. She said, "Listen, Jack, I'm sick and effing tired of being yelled at by you and grin-effed by your people." Now, when I read that, I was blown away. I'd never heard some of that language before. And I said to myself, you know, she put that in the book just to make herself look tough. And she did it just to make herself look tough. Am I right or wrong? And is that a good thing for a woman to do in a certain situation?
You're probably right, because I think at the CEO level, people talk like that. But I will tell you, having been now in probably 12 different industries, it varies by industry. So you change your brand based on industry. So, for example, a lot of the things for my brand that worked well that I promoted in the consulting industry do not work in hospitality, and I've had to tone down. So a good example of changing your brand. Now, from a female perspective, that depends on the kind of brand you want to create yourself as a female leader. Carly Fiorina, when she became CEO of HP, women still were fighting that glass ceiling, thinking the only way to break through the glass ceiling was to beat the crap out of it, essentially, and to break the glass by being as tough as they possibly could. That's not the case anymore in some industries. You'll find in investment banking, for example, women do have to act like that sometimes. So again, that it comes back to your audience and whether that makes sense or not. I think having written a book, I can tell you they probably also encouraged her to put it in there because it's a great thing to pick up in a press release and a great thing to talk about. It's a good talking point when you're talking about the book on a morning talk show.
Okay. There was a comment about that. I won't say anything about it, but I want to know if anybody else agrees that women have an issue with talking tough, because women, I really don't think so anymore, but I just want to know what the couch potatoes think.
I think this, Ran, I think there's a time and place for it. I don't think in the business world it's the right appropriate place
okay.
for it. So
anybody
absolutely
else?
Not.
Thank you, Ran. Anybody else? Okay, you know what? I was recruiting once. I think I told this story already in the automotive industry in HR. And the guy told me that the executives and the managers in that business, it was a brand name company, a global firm, they talked really, really rough. It was endemic to the industry, just like you said. He tried to change it unsuccessfully. So really go with the flow. That might be a rule. Is that what you're saying as well?
Yeah, you can't change an industry, but you can decide, look, if that's not your brand, if that's not what you want to make distinguishable, that's not an industry for you.
Okay.
And there's subcultures in industry. You know, in hospitality, the way that they talk in the kitchen, for example, is very different than the way that you'll find them talking in the front of the house.
Mm-hmm. You know, I don't believe, based on what you've said, that anyone is ever really going to change their brand unless you can take it in a dose of a pill or something like that. I mean, it sounds too hard. I mean, if you were smart enough anyway to be a certain way that impresses everybody, you'd be like that. It's really hard to change. I think there was a quote I put in my blog that every psychotherapist knows that personal change is very rare. Would you agree that changing your brand at a personal level is a very rare thing?
Personal change is rare, for sure. I mean, there are behavioral attributes you have that are strong or weak, and you can use them or not. But changing your brand is not rare because it's all about what aspects of yourself are you promoting. And think about the difference. If I look at a performance review of a 25-year-old versus a 35-year-old, someone who's an associate and then who's moved up to senior director or VP, they're promoting different parts of their brand because their skills have changed over the years. They've gotten much better, for example, at team management. When you're 23, 24, 25, you're not managing a team necessarily, so you don't have those skills to promote as part of your brand.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe change the brand is the wrong word. Maybe it's more focused on evolving your brand. And when you learn, as Rayanne had asked earlier on, when you learn that people have a particular opinion about your brand and it's not the way you want it to be, then you have to ask yourself, how do I evolve my brand? How do I strengthen it, change it, whatever, so that it's what I want it to be for the audience that I'm targeting it for.
Okay, but one of the major issues you've pointed out is that if you've got an accent that people are going to laugh at, don't go and work in that geographical territory. If you've got a certain personality that doesn't suit a certain industry, don't go to that industry. So there's certain things that are really unchangeable or very you're not likely to change. So the point is just to avoid having to change them there. Then there's other people who Penelope Trunk had an interesting article on her blog, I think today or yesterday. What do you have to do to get promoted? Don't go home early. Even if you're really smart and you can get your work done fast, it doesn't look good. If you want to go home early and play golf or something in the summer, you're going to have a hard time changing your brand. So those seem like personal habits, very personal things that are hard to change. And I don't know, maybe a career coach is the equivalent of a psychotherapist, and over a few months you could change it. I don't know. Do you have any examples?
Can I make a suggestion?
Yeah, go ahead.
I mean, just as far as the personal branding is very well and good, but, I mean, nothing there's no brand in the business world that's going to do more for you than simply making money for your company. So if you just keep your head down and you make a ton of money for your company, whatever business you're in, your personal brand is going to be the guy or woman who gets things done and makes money for the company. I mean, I know a lot of people in professional circumstances who are complete and total jerks, and everyone knows it, but they make a lot of money for their respective companies, so it doesn't make a difference.
Okay.
I think it's
go
a good
ahead.
Point, but I think it depends on what your role is. If you're in sales, for example, you're in recruiting, and it's really easy to demonstrate that you're making money or you're saving money, that's one thing. And if your industry tolerates the fact that you can be a Class A jerk while doing it, that's another. But what if you're a public relations professional? No, you're going to create your brand by placements. You're going to create your brand by how much press you're getting, not by necessarily saving the company money or by making the company money.
I think every industry tolerates it. I mean, you brought up Apple as kind of like the epitome of branding. I mean, Steve Jobs is pretty much universally acknowledged to be a class A jerk.
He
but
is
the man gets things done.
But Apple is really good at product branding. They're not necessarily good at personal branding. Product branding is the example I use because it resonates with most people. I can understand how company brands a product. That way I can do that for myself. But, you know, I look at my company, for example, and we do not tolerate that. And I've worked for companies that don't. So I think in terms of your own personal brand, you know, much like whether you're going to choose to work somewhere because your accent won't be tolerated, you have to decide.
I disagree with what you said about Apple and personal branding. People wait all year for Steve Jobs to let them know what's coming out next because they know he puts on a good show. They know he's always going to have something for them. And, again, his personal demeanor makes no difference whatsoever in that context. People
wait
with bated
breath.
Yeah,
but he's a special guy, Dave. He's special.
Yeah.
What about everybody else in the company? I mean,
Apple is not known to be really good at career development and personal development. They're not known for treating their people exceptionally well. So you can, I mean, there are some companies and industries like technology where there is more leeway around personality and niceness, if you will. But I think that gets away from our topic here. I don't think it's about necessarily being nice. We're talking about how do you make yourself stand out. And Steve Jobs has made himself stand out through innovation, through technology. People know he's a jerk, but they'll tolerate it because they care more about what's he going to say next, what's he going to unveil next. So all of us have faults and things that we're not good at. People will tolerate them if they care more about what it is we do bring to the table and what it is we are good at.
Okay,
does that make sense?
Let's talk about that. I want to talk about an interview. So you have to go early. So it's now getting like 20 to 1 or something like that, my time. So
yep.
How much time do you have left?
I have 20 minutes.
Oh, you can save 20 minutes? Okay, fine. So just you can't go overtime. That's the issue for you, right?
Right.
Okay. So what about if someone's in an interview, a job interview, the recruiter or the interviewer does not know that person? Should they have a strategy to go in there, and if they want to brand themselves a certain way, have a lot of examples that show the same thing about them over and over and over again? Is that a brand strategy?
It depends if that thing they're showing is what they want them to be known. I'll give you an example. I have a client I'm working with that's going through a job search right now in the technology industry. So I asked him, what do you want to be known for? What do you want them to learn or see about you before you even walk in the door? And he didn't know, which was the first problem. He had, you know, a list of 40 or 50 things. So we narrowed it down to his top three. And then he started looking at, well, what are they going to do? They're going to look at my Facebook page. They're going to look at my LinkedIn profile. They're going to Google me. And he looked at what came up. And, you know, certainly you can't necessarily change your footprint on the web, but you can change what's the latest blog post that you've made. What does the profile on your Google page say? What's your headline, or your profile on LinkedIn, I'm sorry, what's your headline on LinkedIn? So that the first things that they see, you can shape that. If you think about the process, and we all know very well the process good recruiters go through before they see a candidate.
Okay, but what about when you're in the interview? Do you have a strategy? You have to then, right?
You do, and that comes in with the examples that you give. So everyone knows, you know, and this varies depending on the type of company that you work for and the recruiter. If you're doing behavioral interviewing, for example, it's a great way to tailor it and plan your examples ahead of time. Certainly you don't know what they're going to ask, but if you know they're going to ask for a time you were a good team member or a team example. And so you can think about what team example am I going to use and how can I focus on something that strengthens my brand, as opposed to waiting till I get in there and trying to just think of a team example on the spot.
Okay, but we didn't talk about consistency that much, but what's the role of consistency? That's why I said you pick a whole bunch of things that, you, for instance, I don't know if you're a salesperson, that you like to, you know, go into new territories and things like that, and you come up with a lot of examples, essentially, of the same thing. Even if you're talking about something else, you manage to introduce it. You know what I mean?
I do, but you can give different examples. Let's use sales. Let's say you're really good at closing the deal, and you are branded in your company, and you want to be known for how good you are at closing the deal. You're giving different examples, and you're talking about different instances where you've done it and used maybe a little bit of a different strategy. If you're closing the deal with low-hanging fruit in the sales world, you're going to use a little bit of a different strategy than if it's a client or a prospect you've been working on for a year and a half. If it's a a high growth company versus a mature company, you're going to use a different strategy. So you can talk not just I am great at closing the deal, but how am I great? In what instances am I great? And that's where you create your brand.
Okay, I'm not following you 100%. I'll let anybody else ask a question about that. Anybody interested in that, interviewing and branding? Anything you like to see in a candidate when you thought someone – what's an excellent interview? I mean, in terms of – you know what? I have a bias. I know.
Should they shave?
Pardon me?
Should they shave?
Well, you know, let's go back
to
that hair.
I mean, that's an old topic, but I think it fits in well with this topic in that when a candidate shows up and there may be not exactly the right profile that you know your client or the hiring manager is going to be happy with, is it your responsibility or your obligation as the go-between to let them know, look, I don't think that this is the right fit, or do you push them through because you're out of time of, okay, I just need to get somebody, I need to get a live body in front of the hiring manager? How do you, because that's going to reflect back on you and your own personal brand. So how do you manage something like that? Did we ever really decide how we get past the whole shaving,
okay, so Rayanne
body, piercing, hair?
First of all, Susan Strayer, Strayer.com. Have you ever thought of changing your name to make it easier for people to find you, Susan?
No, I haven't. I like my name, and I've got the Strayer University name recognition. So people,
I never heard of it. Strayer has no branding for me except with regards to you. So Rayanne wants to know, essentially, I know she listened to last week's show, if recruiters should sort of become brand counselors for their candidates.
Absolutely. And if you're not a brand counselor, then you're doing something wrong, because
really?
Part of your job as a recruiter, part of my job when I was a recruiter, was to bring the best candidates and then prepare them so that they'll succeed. So if you're in an industry where a clean-shaven face is important and you can't get that candidate to shave their face, then they're not going to really understand the industry, or they're not going to be able to conform perhaps in other areas. So that gives you a sign. A candidate that's not willing to take your advice when you're helping them and shaping them to be successful in the interview process is probably not someone that's going to take advice down the road, and it's not going to make you successful.
Okay. Rayanne, is that okay?
Yeah, I agree somewhat. My job, I consider my job as kind of a pre-marriage counselor, actually. Is this relationship going to work? And if I send a candidate in under a false pretense, normally they would have dreadlocks or facial hair or back hair or whatever the case may be, and they take care of that in order to get past the first interview, second interview, get the hire, get the offer letter in their hand, and then once they start working there, they have a completely different mindset or not a good fit for the organization, then that reflects poorly on me. That it is my responsibility to find out what they are exactly looking for, the personality type, the...
So you want to be more strategic than tactically changing the person's brand just
absolutely
to get through an
interview.
Well, definitely, Rayanne, and that's where I like the analogy of the pre-marriage counselor, because you're finding out ahead of time, you know, what matters to you. And that's why I always ask people not just what do you have to offer, but what do you want in return? And if they want an environment where they can truly be themselves, they can wear what they want, they can have the hair they want, you know, they can wear earrings, goatees, et cetera, then, you know, I wouldn't put them forward for that job. So you try to get as much information as you can on the front end before you even get into the opportunity of whether you're considering them for a position. And that's how I was really successful as a recruiter, because then you've got part of the fit already there, and you're not trying to convince someone to take a job that they shouldn't have been put up for in the first place.
Okay, let me ask you another question before I forget. What about branding by association? People are going to call your references, and some of them maybe are personal references. I'm thinking specifically of, look at Barack Obama, what this guy's going through with his former pastor. He played up his relationship with this guy, and now that guy's maybe going to sink him. So should you pick your friends to suit your brand? Any opinions on that?
Definitely. Depending on what the job is, I always have people pick out their references ahead of time and prep their references. And when I say prep, I don't mean do anything unscrupulous or tell them what to say. But you can say, this job I'm really interested in, here's why. Here's why I think they're a fit. Here's what I think they might be concerned about. And here's what I think is most important to them. And then you're prepping the reference. And the reference is usually glad, because sometimes references are caught off guard. When I get called for job references, if I haven't been told or prepped, I'm struggling to remember, gosh, what was it like when I worked with them? You've got the overall impression, but you're trying to remember specific examples. So sometimes the prepping not only helps you, but it really helps the person who's referencing you. So
I think an interviewer, a good interviewer with any kind of follow-up questions at all, can expose any false presentation of a brand, because people can't keep up the pretense consistently.
Right.
If you start going in for details, the story falls apart.
And that should be done, Animal, ahead of time. I mean, you shouldn't be trying to present your brand falsely in the interview process. That will absolutely fall apart.
Okay,
and that's why you've got to focus on what your strengths
are. The exact same thing. The reference is the same thing. Okay, I want to see if there's anybody else on the sidelines who wants to talk. There's tons of people here. Or maybe they just want to introduce themselves. Area 301, area code 301. You want to say hi? No? Okay. 773, here's your chance. Stardom. No? Dave Manister, we know you. Workforce, we know you. There's 2949. So one's Rayanne. Is the other you, Susan?
Nope.
Other 949, California, want to say hi? No? 512, that's Gene, right? No. Anyway, Gene, your last chance. You want to say something to Susan? He's sleeping. What do you want to talk about, Susan? What haven't I asked you? I got a lot of trouble next last time I asked this question. What haven't I asked you, or what haven't the people on the couch asked you that you think you should be asked to give a good presentation about brands, personal brands?
Well, I think, first of all, it's the piece about assessment. Everybody's focused on, how do I change my brand? How do I shape my brand? Do you even know what your brand is? Or are you relying on what everyone else tells you it is? So one of the great things you can do is you can, you know, go out to a couple different people, that people you work with, people that are clients, and ask them, what do you think my brand is? And then take all those answers back and ask yourself, is this what I want it to be? And if it's not, what do I want it to be? Because that's the biggest issue, is everybody's so focused on what is my brand, what are people saying about me, how do I change it, but do you really even know what it is?
Yeah, I think to a certain extent, Dave hit on something. Just being, for instance, not necessarily a moneymaker, but a good employee, having high professional standards,
mm-hmm.
That's sort of the guts. That should be the target of the first target of your brand, right?
It is, but to Dave's point, you've also got to then figure out what distinguishes you. If you've got a lot of money makers, is your distinguishability going to be that you make the most, or are you distinguishing it that you make the most money in the shortest amount of time? You make the most money from the most important clients. You've got
to
look at what makes you like everybody else.
Me.
I'm sorry?
That sounds very superficial to me.
In what way?
I think that your goal as an employee or as an owner or whatever you are in your professional life is to go and do a really good job at what you do. And I think that making the most money in the shortest amount of time, or making the most money, or, those are all kind of – I don't understand the difference between those things. You go, you set your goals, and you attempt to meet them, and that then becomes your professional brand.
It does, but there are still things that are different about you than someone else. And I'll give you an example, Dave. Let's say you and I are both working in sales. We're both.
You're talking about differentiation on a personal level. I mean, I don't think that matters for 99% of people.
If it doesn't matter, and I'm hiring for a job, and I've got two people that are both great workers, similar skill sets, they're both have evidence of, they've hit similar sales goals. It's the brand. It's how are they telling me that they're a little bit different? If we're
right.
both
and
great
if one of them is able to hit their sales goals that much better than the other, then that instantly becomes the person that you want to hire. Everything else about the brand becomes inconsequential at that point. You want the person who gets things done.
Not necessarily. It depends on a number of factors. What if they don't fit with the team? What if they get things done, but they do it by being a real jerk, and it's an industry where jerks aren't appreciated? You can't just go on the metrics factor. And if you are, then you should, as a recruiter, go and look at the people you've hired a year or two from now and look at their performance.
I'm not saying that there's nothing, that the soft factors aren't important. They're extremely important. I just think that the focus on personal brand is, to me, it's a little bit somewhat misguided.
Dave, you're very passionate about this. Maybe your idea of personal branding has to do with shallow things, and you're not taking the other things into account, or maybe the other things really don't allow for any differentiation except skill and diligent performance. Is that sort of what you're saying? That there are certain things You know, everybody has to do the exact same thing, and they're way more significant than what everybody else, well, than the other factors. So it's just like a horse race. Who's going to get the work done in the shortest time? It's very easily measurable and the highest quality. Is that what you're saying? Yes or no?
No. I kind of feel like that the way this conversation is going, that we're starting to talk about how to differentiate one person from a million other people. And I just don't think that that's a really except again in the case of a few people who have, you know, been out there and established, you know, personal brands and have a very public role in their lives. I just don't think that's applicable to 99% of people in the workforce.
It's a common reaction that I get a lot, and you know, my thought is that it may seem that way, but if you are looking at a skill that you have, someone else might have that skill, and it might be hard to measure. It might not be how much money you make. So how am I going to figure out who's the better fit, who stands out better? And it's the person who's branded themselves in a certain way. So, for example, presentation skills. I might be a great presenter because I can really think on my feet. Animal might be a great presenter because he's super organized and detailed. No stone goes unturned. So if we brand ourselves in that way, we not only position ourselves to get a job that's the best fit, but then when we get into that job, because we've branded ourselves, we're actually getting to present in the way we want. So it also comes down to job fit. If you don't brand yourself, if you don't focus on not just what you can do but how it's distinguishable, then you're also hurting yourself in terms of, I'll take any sales job where I can make the most amount of money. And, you know, you might not be happy.
It's so complex. That job fit is a very specific thing unique to each company. And when you're talking about branding yourself, you're talking about some very basic things that pretty much everyone tries to brand themselves as, that they're good with people, that they get things done, that they're reliable. It just sounds to me like this is something fairly basic that, you know, unless you're trying to fit into a very specific place with unique circumstances, mm-hmm. that there's just certain qualities that everyone's trying to say that they have.
It is, but it's the combination of those qualities. And that's why, you know, some of the clients that I've worked with in coaching, they'll list those 10 things you just said, Dave, that everybody says, you know, this is what I have. So I say, you know, what are the top two or three, and tell me why? And when you can articulate that, it's really about articulation. When you can articulate that, not just I'm good with people, but why are you good with people, you're branding yourself. You're giving me more information on the front end that helps me make a better decision.
Okay, I have to butt in. I like what you just said, though. Let me just clarify what you said to me, because our time is running out. So what you said is even if there's a dozen skills that everybody has to have in business, there's going to be not everybody's going to do everything equally. So you have to focus on your strengths and find a way to make that clear to other people. Yes or no?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, I get the last question. What about, like, I'm not Kevin Wheeler, there's somebody on Wendell Williams, whatever his name is. He's on ERE all the time. He's always pushing hiring according to testing, if I'm not mistaken. So if you're hired according to these psychological tests that you're doing, that takes away your branding opportunity. Am I right?
It does if that's the only component in your hiring or your selection process. Good companies have selection processes with a number of different pieces. Selection tests are used because you have so many candidates, you've got to find a way to narrow down that candidate pool. I used to work for Home Depot. They get 3 million applications a year. They use a test as the first step because it narrows down the candidate pool. You get past that, then certainly you can focus on your brand. And that's just part of the selection process, something that we all have to live with.
It's time for you to go. Thank you for coming. You're welcome to come back.
Anytime.
Goodbye, everybody. SusanStrayer.com.
Baby, you know it's true. I'm a puppet just for you. I'd do any little thing you say. I wouldn't have it any other way. Take my heart and take my soul. I'm giving you complete control. If you want to see me do my thing, baby, pull my string.